Nina Porzuki here. This week, a warning. There will be some explicit language in the podcast. But more than that, if you're listening with little ones who love professional wrestling, then this might not be the podcast for them. On to the show.
The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Celebrating 50 years
of excellence.
It was the slap felt across the globe. But was it real?
You think it's fake? What's that? Is that fake? Huh? What the hell's wrong with you? That's open hand slap, huh?
December 1984, professional wrestler Dr. D, David Schultz, smacked TV journalist John Stossel to the ground during an interview backstage at Madison Square Garden.
I make a living confronting crooks and people who are fakers, and the one time I get hit is confronting someone where it's obvious that it's fake.
Stossel was reporting for 2020 at the time. Remember that show?
From ABC News, around the world and into your home, the stories that touch your life.
And he did a story about professional wrestling.
What is pro wrestling really all about? Well, John Stossel has gotten a rare inside look at a business that is filled with flamboyant personalities.
Stossel decided to turn it into this hit piece.
John Cosper is a wrestling historian and co-author of Dr. D's just published memoir, Don't Call Me Fake, The Real Story of Dr. D, David Schultz.
He was going to unveil, you know, pull back the curtain and reveal that professional wrestling is in his terms, fake.
So Stossel set about interviewing pro wrestlers like Hulk Hogan.
Of course, he had interviewed Eddie Mansfield, and he got Eddie to show him all these different holds and different moves, showing how they did things in the ring.
And then he asked to interview Dr. D, David Schultz, a noted bad guy with a bleach blonde, curly-haired mullet.
260 pounds of blue-twisted steel and sex appeal.
Maybe fake violence breeds real violence. Seems to egg on bullies like 6'6", 260-pound Dave Schultz. He used to be tag team partner of Eddie Mansfield, a wrestler who's just told us how every match is fake.
That particular evening, December 1984, John Stossel's in the building in Madison Square Garden. And David's story is that Vince McMahon,
legendary professional wrestling promoter and CEO of WWF, now WWE.
Vince McMahon came looking for him and said,
he said, David, we got a guy that's making a joke out of the business. I want you to go out and do an interview with him. I want you to blast him. I want you to stay in character, be Dr. D, and do an interview, but blast him.
I want you to blast him. I want you to tear him up. And that was his mindset going out there, you know, into the hallway when he met with John Stossel.
He's over there with these camera guys, and that's when he starts.
They turned the camera on. They started asking him questions.
I asked Schultz questions that I assume all wrestlers have been asked dozens of times.
Is this a good business?
Yeah, it's a good business. I wouldn't be in it if it wasn't.
Why is it a good business?
Because only the tough survive. That's the reason you ain't in it. And this punk holding the camera, reading he ain't in it. Reading these rednecks out here ain't in it because it's a tough business.
David was getting frustrated, and Stossel wasn't quite getting, I think, what he was looking for. And I don't think he knew how to handle David either.
Finally, I asked him, I said, is that all you got?
Terrific.
What, is that all you got?
I'll ask you the standard question, you know?
Standard question.
I think this is fake.
At that time, I thought he said, I think you're fake. Which, this is national TV we're talking about. Madison Square Garden going all over the world. You think it's fake? What's that? Is that fake? Huh? What the hell's wrong with you? That's open hand slap, huh?
It just makes me mad. I mean, he hit me right on each ear. Doctor now says I have ear damage that's probably permanent.
He said I hit him on the ear. No, I didn't hit him on the ear. I've stopped the tape. I slapped him on his face.
My ears hurt when there are loud sounds. Every time a bus goes by or people talk loudly, it hurts.
I call it bitch slapping him. That's what I did.
Right.
And then he got up and I bitch slapped him again.
You think it's fake? John
Stossel sued Dr. D and won a big settlement. The wrestler had to make a public apology. But would he slap Stossel again if he had to do it over? Probably.
The interesting thing to watch that video is you go back and you can see Mr. Fuji down the hall. You can see a couple other guys. Nobody's shocked by this.
Mr. Fuji is another bad guy with a bowler hat, bow tie, and a deadly cane.
Nobody is alarmed and nobody is disturbed or can't believe that John Stossel has just been assaulted backstage. And that's because, you know, had Mr. Fuji been asked, had Iron Sheik been asked to do what David had done, they would have done the same thing. They would have protected the business. And they're not going to let some guy come in and try to blow the lid off of it, because this is the life that they've chosen. This is their career, strange as it is.
And there's an even stranger word to describe Dr. D's behavior. And no, I don't mean bitch slap, but kayfabe. This week on the podcast, kayfabe and the secretive language of professional wrestling.
Kayfabe. How do you spell that?
Yeah, it's K-A-Y-F-A-B-E. And when I started researching it, I had only seen it in print, so I had no idea how it was pronounced, and I thought it was kayfabe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Kayfabe.
Sounds so, like, sounds elevated. Like,
yeah, it could be like a Bantu, from a Bantu language.
Kayfabe.
It's one of those things that you look at it and you're like, that's English? And surprisingly, the answer is yes, it is. But doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, and I think that's the whole point.
So this is Mick Greenwood. He's an ex-wrestler and current producer for Championship Wrestling in Arizona and Hollywood. And kayfabe, he says, is a secret code word in wrestling that basically means maintaining authenticity inside and outside of the ring.
In movies, they call it the willing suspension of disbelief, you know, in the sense of like, you know, like you don't want to go to a Marvel movie and all of a sudden Iron Man can lift Thor's hammer. It's like, no, he can't. And you would call bullshit on that the second you saw it, while simultaneously not calling bullshit on the fact that there's a Greek god and a billionaire in a suit of armor fighting aliens. Like, that's right. Not the problem. You know, it's the problem is that guy can't pick up that guy's hammer.
Okay, I think I got this one. I'm also just thinking back to watching wrestling. But the kayfabe, it means maintaining this illusion that wrestling is like totally real. Everything
right.
That's happening in it is for real.
Right.
But all of us know, nod, nod, wink, wink, that the whole thing is predetermined and it's been mapped out and it's staged.
Patrick, wrestling is real.
Yeah, I know. Of course it is.
Yeah, right. So that's why, you know, Dr. D smacked John Stossel to protect kayfabe, to protect his character. You know, he's the bad guy. That's what Dr. D would do if someone attacked him and attacked his profession.
Part of keeping kayfabe is keeping consistent to your character. You know, like, for instance, one of my favorite stories of kayfabe from the old 1980s wrestling days, WWE days, was that Vince McMahon would give Ted DiBiase, the million-dollar man, $10,000 a night to go clubbing so that he could show up in a limo, buy everybody there a round of drinks, so that people thought he was legitimately a millionaire. It's like, what, is that not the best character ever?
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the million-dollar man always gets his way.
Yeah, right. I believe that. So,
the best job in the world.
So wait a minute. How far have wrestlers gone to maintain kayfabe?
Oh, far. Really far. So there are stories of wrestlers going to such extreme lengths that they've, like, even had affairs or gotten married to maintain kayfabe or even change their names.
You know, Ultimate Warrior's real name was Warrior by the time he died. That's one of 1,000 confusingly weird things about him.
And one of my favorite anecdotes is about wrestler Nikita Koloff, who was a legendary Russian bad guy during the 1980s and the 90s. Koloff's birth name, get this, is very un-Russian. It's Nelson Scott Simpson. Isn't that great? But kayfabe was so strong, he actually legally changed his name to Nikita Koloff. And then, on top of that, he learned how to speak Russian. Koloff was known as a heel, which is the word for a bad guy in wrestling speak.
I feel like the only other place I've come across that word, I may be totally wrong here, but is in like film noir in the 40s and the 50s. I may be completely off here, but it sounds like, yeah.
The bad guy.
Yeah. Don't be such a heel. Have you ever used that term yourself?
A heel?
Yeah.
I mean, I know what it means. I've always known what it means, but I don't think I've like ever, like, oh, such a heel. No, it feels very old-fashioned. It does feel
so
like 1940s, like film noir, but definitely is part of this underground wrestling speak. Mm. Did you know what the term is for good guy?
No, what is it?
The baby face.
That's kind of out of film noir as well. That's out of the old movies too, it feels.
So who knows what came first, the wrestling or the film? I'm thinking that it came out of the wrestling culture. So Mick Greenwood, who we spoke with earlier, when he wrestled, he was a heel.
My shtick was I was charismatic Chris McManus, and I could talk my way out of anything. Hit a guy low or, you know, grab somebody's tights or just all the you know, cheap, dirty tricks. And the referee would go to try to disqualify me, and I'd kind of give him a nice little shrug and a smile and be like, come on. And he'd be like, all right, don't you do it again. And people would be like, that's bullshit. Like, disqualify this guy.
Yeah, Steam by Peter Gabriel. That was his walk-on music. You know your culture
from your trash. My first promo as a heel, I came out and told the crowd, I've come here from a place called college. And everyone's like, what? And I was like, oh, you look confused. See, college is that place where your friends who didn't join the military or overdose went.
Oh, man.
And somebody threw a bottle of beer at me and I got backstage and the guy I was working for was like, that's a hell of a hot start, kid.
Sounds like he was really hated by the fans. Was he ever afraid about getting beaten up by a fan?
Well, yeah.
Being too good of a bad guy meant that you had to be nervous leaving the building. That, you know, people who were not in on the joke were deeply, deeply insulted and wanted to fight you. And since you present yourself as someone who'll fight anyone, anywhere, anytime, well, the wrong Yahoo is gonna come up and get right in your face.
Nice. This word kayfabe, where did it come from in the first place?
Well, more on that in a sec. I'm recording you, if that's okay, and I just wanted to get your voice and set a level.
Right, Nina, that's okay. You can record the Baron.
The Baron, that is Baron von Raske, is now retired from wrestling, but in his pro days, the German heel became famous for his claw hold and his unique voice.
This is Baron von Raske, the claw master, speaking to Nina about a word she doesn't understand, and so many people don't. Maybe there's no meaning to the word. I don't know, but she wants to talk to me about it. So here we go.
And if you couldn't tell, even though he's long retired, he's 77 years old now, kayfabe is still very much alive. Though after a while, he did drop the aggressive tone.
Kayfabian. That's the word. Kayfabian.
So kayfabe is an abbreviation.
Well, that's a little bit debatable. But what seems to be consensus among all the people whom I spoke with is that the word actually comes out of the carnival circuit.
The wrestlers were around carnival people early on, back in the 1800s or whenever. And anyway, they were around carny people, and carny people have a special way of talking to each other. It's a language called carny.
Do you speak any carny?
Tykea, then, can you... You understand me? You probably can.
Kind of, yeah. That's carny.
Yeah, that's carny. It's just a gibberish way of speaking so that people don't exactly understand you. They hear words, but they don't necessarily understand you. People started using carny talk when they wanted to talk about something and they didn't want anybody else to know about it.
Yeah, so carny is not using specific secret terminology in itself, but rather speaking in a particular way.
John Lister is a wrestling historian based in Bristol, England, and he says the carny way of speaking, that is adding funny endings to words, it was useful to handle the shadier business of the carnival.
For example, if you were talking about fleecing some of your audience by sort of doing some kind of scam on them, you could actually talk openly.
Very convenient. So if it's a carnival word, who came up with it?
There are several theories.
One is that it's a kind of pig Latin version of a word fake, which is, it's very tenuous and that doesn't really seem to work.
Yeah.
Another one that we
pig
believe...
Latin is like you put the A at the end. So if it was fake, it would be ache fay.
Yeah, so it's kind of it sounds like it makes sense, but when you kind of look at it longer, you realize it doesn't really work. It seems a bit too convenient. So for many years, the sort of main theory that a lot of people had was that it came from the Latin word cave, which literally translates as beware.
The Latin word cave, as in what? C-A-V-E?
Yeah, that's how it's spelled, but Lister's pronunciation there is a bit different than how I've always heard it, which is cave. And it actually does mean beware in Latin. So you can kind of hear it, right? Cave, cave, kayfabe. Kind of, right?
Yeah, okay, all right. You're kind of selling me on this a little bit.
It's a bit of a theory, right? It's a stretch. There's another final theory, according to Lister.
More recently, the idea has come about it might actually be a French term, qui vive, which literally means who lives. And during the 18th century, when you would have sort of some mystery as to whether or not somebody who was coming to castle was loyal to the monarchy, you'd say who lives, and they would have to reply, long live the king. And it was almost sort of a password of checking. There's a definite possibility, because not only is it a word, qui vive could conceivably have been kind of corrupted into kayfabe, but it's also a very similar kind of concept. It's a warning and a way of checking if somebody is in the same sort of secret circle as you.
Yeah, there are an awful lot of sort of French bastardizations in the English language.
Yeah. How it got to the Kearney Circuit, that's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah.
I asked Lister and he didn't really couldn't quite make that connection.
But a lot of those French words, they came into British English. So is kayfabe known to Brits as well as Americans?
Well, British wrestlers certainly know about the code of kayfabe. But according to Lister, again, British wrestlers have their own unique code words based on Cockney rhyming slang.
The closest equivalent to kayfabe was to shout Queens. So if somebody said Queens in the dressing room, it would mean somebody from outside the wrestling community has come in. So again, stop talking about your sort of your match, and you know, don't stand with somebody who's meant to be your opponent. And in that case, Queens was short for Queen's Park Rangers, which is a football club, which then rhymed with strangers.
Now what we have today, I think, is no one's protecting their character.
Including Daniel Harnsberger, a.k.a. Daniel Richards, the progressive liberal.
I don't have to protect my character because it's just me.
And I understand now why you all identify with country music. Well, it's slow and it's simple and it's boring, just like each and every one of you.
Sure, Harnsberger's real politics are progressive, but in the ring, though, he's like dialed it up to an 11. His wrestling costume, Patrick, is pretty amazing. Picture this, a t-shirt that's a collage of Hillary Clinton's face, just a bunch of different faces, and then he has knee pads that have donkeys on them.
You know, it's very obvious that we're in a red state. A red, right-wing, bigoted state. Because last month, the fix was in on the progressive liberal Daniel Richards.
He gained notoriety during the last presidential campaign as a heel in the Appalachia wrestling circuit. Imagine that.
I'm just taking things that I think and amping up and using it to troll like the large majority of the people that are watching me.
Everyone here goes against their best interests. No one wants to see a blue-blooded Democrat like me win.
So if I'm in, you know, the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, or somewhere in West Virginia, I'm not kissing babies and high-fiving kids at the end of the night because I've worked really hard to get what we refer to as the heat that I have.
Yeah, those are real little kids passionately screaming there. giving him the heat. So while the progressive liberal tries really, really hard to maintain his persona, he still would talk to me as Daniel Harnsberger, real estate agent from Richmond, Virginia, his sort of, what would you call it, civilian self. And Daniel Harnsberger has actually been talking to the media quite a bit, and he talked to the media quite a bit throughout the election cycle. And for him, it's been really exciting, but it's also been a little bit uncomfortable.
And uncomfortable because he's breaking kayfabe?
Technically, yeah.
I don't know. I was a fan in a time where characters were as protected as possible. As a wrestler, I was brought up by guys that, you know, came from that era and that time. But then, like, I also am cognizant of the world we live in today. It's something that, you know, I, no pun intended, I wrestle with.
With social media and the internet, Daniel says that it's kind of nearly impossible to protect your real identity from your wrestling persona. And he also admits that all the media attention, it actually helped his wrestling career.
So I think that's kind of the push-pull that I have going on.
Right. It just seems like...
At the same time, here I am doing an interview about kayfabe. Yeah, it's quite conflicting.
Yeah, you know, you elite progressive liberals are so hypocritical.
Sure, that's what some right wingers would be saying right now.
Next to that, I'm not sure how real I am as an American. A lot of other wrestlers, they must get pissed off at Daniel.
Maybe, and kind of maybe not, because I hate to break it to you, Patrick, but kayfabe, it's pretty much dead.
Oh, dead?
Dead.
There is actually a moment where it died. Like, there is a conscious moment where it died.
Again, this is Mick Greenwood. And the year was 1997 when...
Vince McMahon opened Monday Night Raw by exposing kayfabe.
Yep, Vince McMahon, you know, the legendary promoter, the CEO of WWE, the man, remember, who asked Dr. D to nail John Stossel in the face for giving up wrestling secret, he killed kayfabe on primetime television. According to Mick, Vince McMahon killed kayfabe because he literally was on the ropes.
He was in a fight with WCW.
A competing wrestling organization.
And WCW was winning. And WCW was doing old school wrestling, you know? Super, super kayfabe. You know, like, if your character was a garbage man, then 2 days a week they put you on the back of a truck and had you throw trash away. Vince was not the billionaire he is today. And he was losing. He was being driven out of business. And so he gives this speech on Monday Night Raw.
It has been said that anything can happen here in the World Wrestling Federation, but now more than ever, truer words have never been spoken.
He says something to the effect of, "We think you're too smart for this. And we think that the good guy versus bad guy stories from years past are passé," is the word I remember he used.
"We in the WWF think that you, the audience, are quite frankly tired of having your intelligence insulted. We also think that you're tired of the same old simplistic theory of good guys versus bad guys. Surely the era of the superhero who urged you to say your prayers and take your vitamins is definitely passé."
And he explained that, you know, our show is not competition. Our show is entertainment. And that's where he coined the phrase sports entertainment.
"Even though we call ourselves sports entertainment because of the athleticism involved, the key word in that phrase is entertainment. We borrow from such program niches like soap operas, like The Days of Our Lives, or music videos such as those on MTV, daytime talk shows like Jerry Springer and others, cartoons like The King of the Hill on Fox, sitcoms like Seinfeld, and other widely accepted forms of television entertainment."
As soon as wrestling was called sports entertainment, kayfabe died in an instant.
sports entertainment.
Yeah.
Kind of have your cake and eat it.
Right. It's a pretty handy phrase there.
Yeah. It's almost as though Vince McMahon is, he's double bluffing. He's kayfabing the kayfabe.
Wrestling didn't die at all. It actually became stronger. And he went on to make millions and millions of dollars. WWE beat out WCW. There's no longer a WCW.
Wow. It's almost like that moment in Dallas where they just said it had all been a dream.
Right. Oh, what a disappointing ending. But actually, Patrick, McMahon had let the cat out of the bag nearly a decade earlier than that Monday Night Raw scene.
A bombshell. WWF owner Vince McMahon trying to free wrestling from a variety of regulations, like requiring athletes to be licensed and cleared by doctors before events, appeared before the New Jersey Senate on February 9, 1989.
And declared wrestling wasn't real.
That wrestling was, quote, an activity in which participants struggle hand in hand, primarily for the purpose of providing entertainment to spectators rather than conducting a bona fide athletic contest.
So a bill deregulating wrestling passed the New Jersey Senate, and kayfabe died on the Senate floor, but not for the general public yet. Today, actually, though, I think wrestling has gone into the total opposite direction, taking a page in a way from reality television. So it's all now about breaking the fourth wall, exposing the tricks of the trade, peeling away behind the scenes.
Like, I posted a photo of me behind the scenes the other day, showing one of our wrestlers how to hit another wrestler with a crowbar, how I wanted it to look. And, you know, and somebody snapped a candid, everybody's big smiles and laughing. It's hilarious because we're doing ridiculous things. That photo would have gotten me blacklisted from the business not 15 years ago. And when I say blacklisted, I mean never draw a dime again. And when people I used to work with saw me, they would beat the snot out of me. Even having this conversation with you right now, part of me feels like I'm in trouble. You know, like that I'm a no good snitch, that I'm exposing the business, that I'm breaking all the rules, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm not.
There is an argument, Patrick, that kayfabe lives on in a different arena. Here's historian John Lister again.
If you sort of, you know, apply the idea of kayfabe to sort of politics today, the fact that a lot of the time, you know, people might not literally believe what you're saying, but they want to kind of believe the idea and they like to suspend their disbelief, and there's sort of a lot of parallels there.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of parallels. I mean, there's been an element of kind of kayfabe in politics,
always,
it seems, for
sure,
a really, really long time. But the suspension of disbelief just seems to have been raised in recent times a little bit more as, you know, people embrace ideas over reality.
Right. Funny enough, and you might remember this, it made me think about one recent occasion where politics and wrestling literally crossed over. So you know what this is. July 2017, President Trump tweeted out a wrestling video where Trump, you know, he's standing right outside of a wrestling ring in a venue, and he takes down his opponent, a man that is doctored in the video to represent, quote unquote, CNN.
It was ironic to me that he tweeted out a wrestling video, right? Because at one level it's violence, but at the other level it's fake. And a few weeks ago I'd even tweeted that the ongoing briefing nonsense from the White House about the briefing room seems like very strained kayfabe to me, which I imagine they will continue in front of the cameras.
That's MSNBC reporter Chris Hayes there.
I can't believe that he said kayfabe.
I know. I was shocked when I saw the clip.
Maybe he was a former sports commentator or something. Sports entertainment.
Well, he sees political entertainment. There it is.
This video, it just reinforces this storyline that the White House has just been hammering away at for the longest time about the tension between the president and the press, and just like takes it to the nth degree in that very kind of wrestling way. With what, Trump is the baby face?
Right, and the press is the heel. I don't know. I think the only major difference between politics and professional wrestling is in politics, the stakes are real. I mean, CNN reporters at that point were trolled. People were threatened. I mean, this theater has actual real consequences. Whereas, you know, Hulk Hogan losing a title. Okay.
Right. Who cares?
Right.
And Trump didn't seem to recognize that he was kind of crossing a line here. His response to the criticism for sharing this video was, oh, it was just a joke.
Yeah,
it was just
wasn't
a silly
real.
Wrestling
a joke.
Joke.
Silly. The CNN clip that Trump tweeted, I was curious to see the actual video, and it comes from a WrestleMania event that took place 10 years ago.
Right to the neck, a Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What's going on over here?
Donald Trump is in a world he is not familiar with. This is not real estate. This is the WWE.
It was called the Battle of the Billionaires, and in it, Donald Trump knocks down WWE promoter Vince McMahon, the man who killed kayfabe.
Hey, look at this! Donald Trump!
Donald Trump taking down Mr. McMahon!
Oh, my God! The hostile takeover of Donald Trump on Vince McMahon has happened at WrestleMania 23.
I didn't think he would do it. I just was suggesting it, but Donald Trump...
So Donald wins, of course, and the punishment to the loser is that inside the ring, Donald shaves Vince McMahon's head bald.
One billionaire shaving another billionaire's head.
There's always a hair theme to, like, Donald Trump's antics.
Right. Perhaps the biggest story or mystery about Donald Trump is his hair.
Yeah.
It's a storyline for sure.
But last week, that storyline kind of came to an end.
I try like hell to hide that bald spot, folks. I work harder.
Could this be Trump breaking kayfabe?
Thanks to so many people, to engineer Tina Toby and Mike Wilkins for putting me in touch with many, many wrestlers, to Jody Gersh and Lauren Rothering, and a big thanks to all of our colleagues at PRI's The World.
If you enjoy The World in Words, please do leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps spread the word.
And most importantly, thanks to you for listening.
Next question, Jeff, where are you? Right there.
Yeah. I just want to thank each and every one of y'all for all you've done to your bodies. It's still real to me, damn it. I mean, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You're awesome.